Do you ever wonder what's happening behind the scenes of the multi-trillion dollar fashion industry? In the new podcast, Fashion People, Puck correspondent and 20-year fashion veteran Lauren Sherman and a rotating cast of industry insiders discuss what fashion people are really talking about behind the scenes of the star-studded business, from creative director switcheroos to M&A drama, DTC downfalls, and Met Gala mishaps. Fashion People, a presentation of Odyssey in partnership with Puck, is available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, listeners. If you're hearing this, I'm going to assume you're at least interested in money and understanding the economy and finances. And some of us want our kids to have that knowledge, too. Check out Million Bazillion, Marketplace's award-winning kids podcast that breaks down money to help dollars make more sense. A whole new season is out now. Million Bazillion is presented in partnership with Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Greenlight helps kids and teens learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. You can learn more at greenlight.com/million. And tune in to Million Bazillion wherever you find your favorite podcast.
Hey, everyone, it's Rima. So last week, we did an episode about the fashion industry and the ways it drives overconsumption. And this week, we're looking at the other side of the equation, the people who make all those clothes we love to buy and then throw away. It's a topic our producer Alice Wilder has been looking into. She's been in touch with a garment worker, a woman who we're calling Lorena, which is not her real name. We're protecting her identity because of a pending legal claim. Her story is pretty remarkable, and I'm going to hand off the show to Alice to share it with you. All right, here's Alice.
One day, Lorena arrived at work, a small garment factory in downtown Los Angeles. Most mornings, her bosses would greet her warmly with a, "Hi, how are you?" But not today.
Ya cuando llegué un día lunes, ya está el patrón molesto y el manager molesto. Ya como que me veían diferente, sentí, presiento cuando una persona te cambia contigo.
You can sense when someone is acting differently towards you, Lorena said. Her bosses were icing her out.
Porque el patrón me saludaba, hola, ¿cómo estás? Todo era diferente.
Lorena had an idea of why this was happening. She'd recently started to question the low wages at work, complaining to her bosses that they deserved to be paid more. Since then, things had changed. She remembers trying to start a conversation with a coworker.
Dice, yo no quiero hablar contigo porque el manager me dijo, no hablas con esa señora porque habla mucho. Ella no sabe el precio. Así le dijo el manager.
Lorena says her coworker was like, I can't talk to you. The manager says you talk too much and that you don't know what you're talking about when it comes to pay. After that, Lorena said she couldn't even have a coffee with her coworkers anymore. It was isolating.
Yo cuando llega el patrón siempre yo me defiendo a él. Siempre hablo, siempre por eso él no quiere mi presencia allí porque sabe que yo soy una persona también que no me dejo.
They wanted her to stay quiet, but if anything, it was just making her angrier. Because Lorena told us she's the kind of person who stands up for herself. I'm Alice Wilder, and you're listening to This Is Uncomfortable. The more I thought about fast fashion, how it impacts consumers and the environment, the more convinced I became that we wouldn't get the full picture until we spoke to a garment worker. This type of work has historically been done by the most vulnerable people in the United States, immigrants, mostly women. Today, most of those workers are in Los Angeles. Over 40,000 people work in the city's garment factories, and they make among the lowest wages in the country. One of those people is Lorena. She's been a part of the industry for over 20 years. Lorena's story is the story of a woman who stood up not just against a boss taking advantage of her, but a system that has long profited off of cheap labor. Learning all of this changed the way I think about getting dressed every morning. But more importantly, it gave me hope that with enough courage and persistence, the system could change for the better.
Me vine de Chiapas hasta aquí. Yo vine a los 17 años aquí en este país. Mi papá estuvo aquí.
Lorena was a teenager when she immigrated from Chiapas, Mexico. She came to join her father in Los Angeles, where he was working in a garment factory. He taught her the skills of the trade.
mi papá me enseñó a coser en la máquina de overlock.
He showed her how to use a complex machine called the overlock. It uses 4 or 5 threads at once.
Es una máquina especial. Mi papá me enseñó cómo se enhebra la máquina, cómo se pone el hilo, cómo se hace la blusa, se pega la manga. Me costó mucho, pero...
Lorena's father taught her step by step how to thread the machine, how to attach a sleeve, how to make a blouse.
Casi un año tardé de aprender, ya con experiencia ya sé hacer de todo ahora.
Little by little, over the course of a year, she learned how to use it.
Pues como uno de niña, de muchacha, pues se siente uno bien porque ya está ahí aprendiendo más experiencia, voy sacando más pieza, voy agarrando más práctica, voy aprendiendo más enhebrar la máquina.
At the end of a long day, she felt good. Learning how to manage all the threads, getting faster, it was satisfying. But not long after she moved to LA, her dad ended up having to go back to Mexico to take care of the rest of the family, leaving her alone.
Sí, estuvo él aquí como 10 años y luego se fue para México. Por eso me quedé sola.
She was taken in by an aunt. Lorena was just 17 years old, without her parents, having to come up with $100 a month for rent.
Pagaba $100 la renta y no tuve ese apoyo de una familia, pero como no me apoyaron nadie, no tuve familia, solo mi papá me dejó sola aquí.
Lorena knew that she should be going to high school, and she wanted to. But she also had to pay rent, and those traditional teenage jobs many of us had, like working fast food or at the mall, those jobs require papers. And Lorena is undocumented, leaving her with fewer options. So she went looking for a job at a garment factory, where hiring recent immigrants is the norm.
Busqué lucha, busqué manera cómo encontrar una persona que me diera oportunidad o que me diera chance para aprender más en la máquina de overlock.
Lorena was in that frustrating place where you need experience to get a job, but can't get that experience without a job. A lot of people turned her away. Then she met this one factory owner who, like the others, asked if she had experience.
El dueño me dijo, ¿sabes trabajar? ¿Tienes experiencia? Yo le dije que no tenía mucho, pero ya sé enhebrar la máquina. No tengo experiencia, ¿para qué voy a mentir? Si me dan, pues está bien, si no, pues ni modo.
Lorena told him, I'm not going to lie. I don't have much experience. Like, I know enough to thread the machine. But give me a chance and I can learn. The factory owner, who she calls the American, told her,
Okay, so okay, está bien, me dijo el americano y me dio oportunidad de hacer mochila, hice bolsa.
It's okay that you don't have much experience. He was willing to take a chance on Lorena and hired her to sew backpacks. He paid her well, 25 cents a backpack. Remember, this was the 90s. But most importantly, he encouraged her.
Y él me echó la mano. Le doy gracias a Dios a ese americano. No sé dónde está ahora.
She doesn't know where he is now, but to this day, she's grateful to him for giving her a chance. That was the beginning of Lorena's career in the garment business. She now has over 20 years of experience and a lot of pride in her work. Even if these days, she says the pay isn't good.
Sí, me gusta porque... Como mal pagado, pues, ¿qué se puede hacer uno también? ¿Verdad? Es el único trabajo que sabe hacer uno aquí.
That's because garment workers are typically paid what's called a piece rate. When Lorena's talking about sewing t-shirts, she means this one very particular task, attaching the collar to the shirt with the overlock machine, over and over for 8 or 9 hours a day. And she gets paid 20 or 30 cents per collar she attaches, not per hour she spends sewing.
And so, like, if you're doing zippers all day, you're getting paid, you know, 2 cents per zipper that you sew.
That's Professor Alfredo Carlos. He teaches labor studies at California State University, Dominguez Hills. He told me the piece rate impacts every part of the workday.
That means you have to be sewing really fast all day long. And like, you don't take into account that, you know, people get tired. You know, your back starts hurting.
And each time a worker gets up to stretch or have a snack, they lose money.
Solamente una vez al baño o dos veces al baño, hasta allí nomás.
Lorena said that at the factory where she worked, they were discouraged from using a bathroom more than once or twice a day. Nearly every moment was supposed to be spent working.
Pero hay veces yo tomo líquido, yo tomo agua porque mi salud es lo más importante.
Lorena drank water during the day anyway, putting her health above the pressure to not step away from her machine. She says sometimes her manager would ask her,
¿Por qué te tardas mucho al baño?
Why are you taking so long to go to the bathroom?
Y claro que sí, voy, porque no me están pagando por hora, me están pagando por pieza. Hago lo que quiera y lo que me están dando. Así siempre le contesto, primero mi salud y después el trabajo. Sin salud no puedo trabajar.
She tell him, because you're not paying me by the hour, you're paying me by the piece. And if I'm not healthy, I can't work. Garment work is hard on people's bodies. There's often no air conditioning and poor ventilation in factories. Lorena told us that was the case in her factory. Many workers report roaches and even a lack of clean drinking water. And then, of course, there's the toll that all that sewing takes on a person. Professor Alfredo Carlos saw this up close. His mom was a garment worker in LA.
I look at my mom and I see sort of like the life that she spent doing that work, 40 years in garment work, and I see like the impact it had on her body. Like, you know, she has sort of a hunchback. She was sitting every single day. She has bad circulation in her legs. And so part of it is the fact that, like, you know, you're massively producing, and we live in a culture where, you know, the new thing has to come out quicker, faster, better.
Some major brands are shipping out more than 1 million packages a day, constantly running sales and creating micro seasons to entice customers to keep buying. Here's how they can make so many pieces of clothing so quickly. Many major apparel brands like Forever 21 and Fashion Nova don't actually have their own factories. Instead, they have contracts with small factories. Many of those factories are outside of the US, but there are plenty in Los Angeles's fashion district. Let's say I'm starting a fast fashion brand and I want to get a new line of t-shirts on my website ASAP. I'd get together with a small factory in LA and say, hey, I want these 50 t-shirt designs made in 10 different sizes, and I need them by next week. I'll pay you $7 per shirt. If the factory owner agrees, they then decide what to pay their workers. Like, okay, you're sewing on sleeves, you get 4 cents per sleeve. You're sewing the sides of the shirt together, that's 5 cents per seam. You're doing necklines, that's 8 cents. These are real numbers, by the way, from a New York Times investigation into Fashion Nova's labor practices. The small factories all over LA produce apparel for multiple brands at the same time. So the person making my shirts isn't on my payroll. There's a layer between them and my brand. So if there's some bad PR, like, say, a story about how little workers making my clothes got paid, I, as the brand, can say, hey, go talk to the factory owner. I had nothing to do with how those people were paid. Professor Carlos put it this way.
And so you'd end up with a situation where you have the Spider-Man meme where all the Spider-Men are like pointing at each other.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's not me, you know, it's them. And they're like, well, you know, we take direction from them. There's pressure from them for us.
And in the middle of all this finger pointing are workers like Lorena, who are just trying to survive under the piece rate system. Legally, under this system, workers are supposed to make at least the equivalent of their state's minimum wage. If they don't, employers are required to make up the difference. So they're entitled to the minimum wage no matter how fast or slow they sew. A 2021 study found that the average LA garment worker made between 4 and 6 cents per piece. So a worker making on the high end of that would have to produce 1,733 pieces a day in order to make $13 an hour, which was the minimum wage for a small business in California at the time. In 2022, the U.S. Department of Labor found that some California garment workers were making as little as $1.58 an hour. What happened to the other $11.42 that those workers were entitled to? Their bosses kept it for themselves. Can you explain, like, how working at a piece rate leads to wage theft?
Wage theft happens in all kinds of ways. But working at a piece rate is basically one of the easy ways for them to steal your wages, because, you know, throughout the day of the process, like, you can, one, miscount the pieces that you actually make. Like, who's keeping track of that? If you're sewing, you're not paying attention to how many you do. And so, and then because of, you know, a lot of their immigration statuses, they take these jobs because, you know, they don't have a lot of other job opportunities. They're not going to say, oh, no, you miscounted. You know, like, so there's like that piece, but also, like, it just doesn't add up to what a minimum wage would be. And, you know, if it's the only job that you have access to, like, what are you going to say? You're going to say no?
Lorena shares an apartment in Los Angeles with her partner and daughter. Their rent is about $1,600 a month, and they're always worried about being able to pay the bills. Lorena told us that she got paid in cash, and that she and her partner, who worked at the same factory, would only find out if they'd been scheduled for shifts when their bosses called them. We asked her what her life would be like with better pay.
Pues cambiaría mucho. Mejor viviría uno mejor, ya compra su cosa, ya da uno su gustito, aunque sea un parque, ir a comer mango.
Lorena wants to walk through the park with her partner and daughter, past people selling ice cream and mango, and buy some, without stressing about whether she could still make rent.
Porque ya tienes un salario que estás ganando mejor.
With dependable income, life would be better. For a long time, that felt like a fantasy. But in 2022, everything changed. Or at least it was supposed to. That's after the break.
On Death, Sex, and Money, we feature interviews with you, our community of listeners, getting honest about uncomfortable things.
I developed an illness where it isn't safe for me to drive. A friend once said to me, "Sex is like air. You don't think about it until you're not getting enough." This is a similar sort of thing if you just replace sex with driving.
Listen to Death, Sex, and Money wherever you get podcasts.
Welcome back. I'm Alice, a producer for This Is Uncomfortable. For years, garment workers and their advocates have been working with California lawmakers to draft a piece of legislation. If passed, it would make two major changes. First, it would deal with that Spider-Man problem Professor Carlos was talking about. Brands and factories blaming each other for how little workers get paid.
This actually groups them all together and says, no, you guys are connected, like that you hire them, so you have a responsibility to hire people who are going to, meet the basic standard of like working conditions that we set in California.
And it would eliminate the piece rate system for garment workers, giving people like Lorena the chance to earn a livable wage so she could afford small luxuries like buying mango at the park. The bill had plenty of opposition. A similar bill to end the piece rate failed in the California legislature a few years back. And business groups rallied to make sure this bill wouldn't pass.
On behalf of the California Chamber of Commerce, respectfully in opposition to SB 62 as a job killer. Thank you, Mr.
They argued that existing laws already address these issues and that the piece rate actually benefits workers. They also warned that putting more responsibility on brands would cause them to stop manufacturing in California, which was also the argument on the floor of the state assembly.
We want to talk about wage theft. Wage theft is when all of those jobs move out of the state. If we want to keep our Californians working, we need to enforce the laws that are on the book, and we need to make California a state that is business friendly.
It was time to vote on the bill that could change everything for California garment workers.
Ayes 29, noes 9, the measure passes.
Governor Gavin Newsom signed it into law. On New Year's Day of 2022, the law now referred to as the Garment Workers Protection Act, the first of its kind in the United States, went into effect. Overnight, paying garment workers by the piece became illegal, and brands would be held responsible for making sure that their clothes are manufactured in safe factories that pay their workers fairly. I mean, it seems like a huge win. Why did it take so long for this to be in place for workers?
I mean, it takes a really long time to move, against multi-billion dollar corporations. You know, you're talking about, the biggest brands in the world, and they all use these mechanisms, and that's where all of their profit comes from, exploiting workers.
Shortly after the law passed, Lorena's boss gathered all of her coworkers into a meeting and was like, "This law is bad news for me. If I have to pay you hourly, I might have to close this factory."
Hubo una junta y nos dijo que ustedes apóyanos y les apoyaré, dijo él, porque no sé si voy a seguir trabajando, tal vez voy a cerrar.
Lorena says he offered them a choice: support him by accepting a piece rate, or lose their jobs entirely. Professor Carlos told me that clothing manufacturers are increasingly leaving the U.S. to work in countries with even fewer regulations. So for Lorena and her coworkers, losing their jobs at this factory could mean competing for the few garment jobs left in L.A.
El patrón nos había prometido que si va mejor bien, entonces probablemente voy a pagar por hora por usted porque me apoyan.
To sweeten the deal, Lorena says her manager promised that if they accepted lower pay for a while, that when things got better, he'd eventually pay them by the hour. Lorena says she and her coworkers agreed to help their manager. Then, one day while she was at work, her boss got word that the factory next door was being raided by the authorities. Lorena says her boss was afraid that they would be next.
Él tuvo miedo, cerró la fábrica un momento, como dos horas.
She says the manager instructed everyone to turn off their sewing machines, hide in the kitchen, and not make any noise.
Y nos metimos en la cocina, que no hicieran ruido, dice.
They stayed there for 2 hours, until they were in the clear. Lorena and her coworkers made good on their promise to support their manager. Now it was time for him to hold up his end of the bargain.
No, nunca, ¿para qué voy a decir? Él nunca nos paga por hora. Yo nunca me gusta tampoco decir las cosas. Mentira, es la verdad, nunca nos pagó por hora.
I don't like to lie, Lorena said. He never paid us by the hour. Never. Lorena and her coworkers aren't alone in this. The U.S. Department of Labor found that in 2022, after the passage of the Garment Workers Protection Act, 32% of garment manufacturers in Southern California continue to pay their workers a piece rate. What are the loopholes in the system? Because it sounds like she was still getting paid a piece rate even with the law in place.
It's not a loophole, it's an enforcement hole. We don't have the enforcement capabilities and capacities to enforce a lot of the laws that happen. So we have to bolster our enforcement capacity, and that's a political choice.
There is a way for workers to raise alarm bells about employers not following the law, stealing their wages. But the nonprofit newsroom Cal Matters did really great reporting on this, and they found that the people processing these claims are so understaffed that it takes them 800 days to even respond to a claim of wage theft. That's over 2 years. And if, after all that time, they find that someone was indeed a victim of wage theft, there is no guarantee they'll ever get back the money that their employer stole from them. That means a lot of employers are getting away with wage theft.
I was looking at, you know, some of the penalties are really weak. It's like $200 per employee per pay period. So like one of the loopholes is this is part of internalizing the cost of production where like, you know, if you get caught, it's not that much money. So you'll just wait to get caught and hope you never do. But if you do, it's just a part of the cost of doing business.
Since the law took effect in January 2022, two factory owners have been charged with a felony for wage theft.
Which I was really surprised by, honestly. And I think California is really trying to take the lead in saying, hey, listen, you're breaking the law and paying a fine isn't enough.
That's progress. But there have been no other felony prosecutions since then. Lorena couldn't afford to wait for policy changes, like more state funding for enforcement. She said that her bosses would tell her that hourly pay was coming. She just had to be patient. After a while, Lorena realized that the money they promised was never going to arrive. She felt betrayed. Just talking about this, Lorena becomes indignant.
¿Y yo? ¿Y qué? No tengo necesidad, no tengo hambre. Tengo también necesidad, tanto como el patrón, tanto como el manager. Todos tenemos necesidad.
And what about me? She says. Don't I have needs? Don't I need to eat? I have needs the same way the boss does. If Lorena wanted to get paid, she'd have to take matters into her own hands. Shortly after the law was passed, Lorena says this one coworker came to her and was like, hey, my pay has gone down. I only made $280 for 6 days of work. When Lorena went in to pick up her pay, she was shocked. She'd only gotten $170 for 3.5 days of work. Usually, she'd get around $240 for that amount of time. She also suspected that her boss had been undercounting the number of items she'd been sewing. Lorena got her coworkers together and asked them,
un día junté con los compañeros allí. ¿Tú crees que está bien lo que nos está pagando el patrón? ¿Verdad? No.
Do you think everything is okay here? That the boss is paying us fairly?
es que cuando me salí mal, me salió decepcionado, me pagan el viernes y me pagaron $170. Y ya los de compañeros le dije, está pagando barato el patrón, hay que hablar con él, hay que decir.
Lorena encouraged her coworkers to speak up about what was going on. And that's when her coworkers and manager started to give her the cold shoulder. They wouldn't greet her at work anymore in their usual way. And none of her coworkers were backing her up. I wondered if she was frustrated with them.
Porque me sentí mal. No, ellos tienen miedo.
Lorena says it felt bad to be out there on her own. But her coworkers were afraid, which she understood. What she was mad about was the fact that her manager clearly gave preference to the workers who kept their heads down.
Es lo que le gusta el patrón de las otras compañeras que no hablan, que no platican, no salen, no se defienden, solo se quedan calladas así.
And she stopped getting as many calls to come into work. She would call to ask her boss what was going on, but Lorena says he wouldn't answer the phone. Finally, she confronted him. Lorena told him,
hay un Dios que ve todo lo que estás haciéndole, todo en esta vida se paga lo que hace.
There is a God who sees everything you're doing to me, and it's not right. I've worked for you for 3 years, and this is how you treat me?
Y entonces lo que siembra, lo que cosecha, le dije yo a él, él nomás.
She warned him, you reap what you sow. Enough. You don't get to treat me like this anymore.
Se rió, él nomás se ríe.
And then he laughed in her face. She was furious.
Yo le dije, yo tengo derecho, ¿por qué? Porque estoy sacando producción y quieren bien hecho el patrón. ¿Y dónde está pagando? Está pagando una miseria. Eso no es justo, le dije yo al manager.
She told her manager, I have rights. I'm the one making the clothes. The factory owner wants good quality work and he wants it done quickly, but the pay is miserable. That's not right. Lorena told us that her manager went to the factory owner, his boss, and basically said, this lady is a troublemaker.
Ya el manager ya no me quería dar trabajo, me hacía a un lado, llegaba más gente, entraba otra persona a trabajar en la Overlock, le daba más prioridad a ellos que a mí sabiendo que no hay trabajo.
Soon after, her partner, who also worked at the factory, started to get his work cut back.
Y también así hicieron su vida de imposible también mi pareja.
Lorena says they made his life impossible. And she was furious that her partner was being punished for something she had done. The calls to schedule shifts stopped entirely. They had both lost their jobs.
Sí, me dio coraje y tengo necesidad de pagar mi renta, mi comida, todo. Pues siente uno sin ganas que te baja tu motivación, tu ánimo.
Lorena felt depressed. With both her and her partner out of a job, she didn't know how they were going to be able to pay rent or buy groceries. What kind of legal recourse do workers have if they're retaliated against?
So there is legal recourses because you can't be fired for what's referred to as protected labor activity.
Professor Alfredo Carlos again.
People are more protected when they belong to a union or when they engage in collective action. So you don't have to be in a union to get that.
Okay, so what Lorena was doing, talking to her coworkers, demanding fair pay, is legally protected. It's not a fireable offense.
The thing is, you have to hire lawyers. And this is what makes all of the enforcement really hard, is that like it takes resources that a lot of people don't have. Even the Government Worker Center, even though they've been doing a lot of amazing work, they're always like, you know, the money goes to defending people, but it's still minimal compared to what the needs are.
The Garment Workers Center is an organization focused on ending sweatshop conditions in LA's factories. They connected us with Lorena for this story. And they're one of the groups that helped make the Garment Worker Protection Act state law. Throughout the summer of 2023, while she was losing shifts, Lorena and her partner had started looking for help. One day, Lorena's partner brought home one of the Garment Workers Center's flyers. It was advertising a coffee hour for workers who wanted to learn about their rights. They decided to call.
Mi pareja llamó y preguntó qué nos puede, de qué se trata.
A woman named Santa picked up the phone. She was a former garment worker. Santa reassured Lorena that what happened to her was wrong, that she shouldn't give up. They met in person, and Lorena shared her fears, that her boss would tell his industry friends not to hire her, making it impossible for her to get work. Lorena and her partner are both undocumented, and she says she was also afraid that reporting wage theft to the authorities could draw the attention of immigration. Santa told her,
No, no se preocupe, no tenga miedo. Usted está defendiendo su derecho, usted trabajando, pero tú no tengas miedo. Ya deja ese miedo, me dijo ella. Es por la razón, ella me motivó y me dio valor de estar aquí.
Don't worry. Leave that fear behind. You are defending your rights. The two became friends. Lorena credits Santa with giving her the courage to be doing this interview with us. The Garment Worker Center filed a wage theft claim on Lorena's behalf. Big picture, progress is being made for garment workers in LA. But that doesn't get Lorena and her partner their jobs back. Earlier this year, the state of California invested $18 million to fund wage theft prosecutions. And the Garment Worker Center, along with many other groups, is pushing for a federal version of California's law. It's called the Fabric Act. Today, Lorena's working a few days a week, cleaning houses. All this, the steps forward, but also the unresolved injustices, are things Professor Carlos thinks about a lot. He's the son of a garment worker and is now a college professor. A lot of people would call that the American dream, but he doesn't see it that way.
One other reason I like teaching in labor studies is that, like, it's not enough for me to have made it out. It's not enough for me to, like, be successful on my own. It's how do we create an economy that works for everybody so that people don't have to struggle, that the struggle doesn't become the defining characteristic of why you deserve a decent life.
As Rima and I talked about last week, individual choices like mending clothes or thrifting are a good way to disrupt the fast fashion system. But Professor Carlos says a bigger shift is needed. People at the top of the industry need to make different choices.
The economy is built with people. People make the stuff. People decide how much the stuff costs, how much of the profit they're going to take home, or what their, you know, bottom line wants to look like.
He said that billion-dollar brands could internalize the cost of paying workers fairly, taking a relatively small hit to their profits.
We can debate on how much they should get. You know, we can disagree on, you know, the percentage, but, like, there's no reason why workers can't get more.
When I listen to Lorena tell her story, I hear someone who refuses to stop speaking up, even though it's cost her a lot.
Pues la verdad, pues estoy aprendiendo muchas cosas, aprendo mis derechos, ya le estoy dejando el miedo, ya soy una persona que fuerte.
Lorena told us, I'm fearless, I'm strong, and I want my coworkers to know that we have rights. We can defend ourselves and speak up.
Pues un patrón, un manager que nos quiere ver menos, que nos quieren tratar como esclavo, como sea, como que no tenemos valores, pero sí tenemos valores, somos iguales, somos hijos de Dios.
The factory managers and owners think we're beneath them, she told us. They treat us like slaves, like we have no value. But we do. We are all equal. We are children of God. At the very end of our interview, after we'd finished asking Lorena all of our questions, she turned to her friend Santa from the Garment Workers Center. Lorena's voice sounded way more relaxed than it had been the whole time.
Hice bien, más o menos.
I did good, more or less, Lorena asked her friend.
Es la verdad lo que dije, yo saqué, me desahogué.
It's true what I said. I let it all out. Everything they did to me. Yeah, you did a good job, Santa responded. And they high-fived on their way out of the studio. All right, that is all for our show this week. If you have thoughts about this story or just want to write us a note about what's on your mind, you can always email us at uncomfortable@marketplace.org. We love hearing from you all. If you like this episode, please share it with your friends, leave a review, rate us on whatever app you're using. That stuff really does help us out, and it helps bring our show to new listeners. Also, be sure to check out our newsletter this week. We've got a bonus Q&A with Professor Carlos about his mom's experience as a garment worker and how that shaped his career. If you're not already signed up, you can do that at marketplace.org/comfort.
This episode was written and reported by me, Alice Wilder. I produced it with Sophia Polisa Carr and Jasmine Romero. Jasmine conducted our interview with Lorena in Spanish. Thank you, Jasmine. Sophia Polisacar edited this episode. We had help from Rima Crace, Hannah Harris-Green, and our intern, Marika Proctor. Anna DePueto helped with translation. Zoe Saunders is our senior producer. Sound design and audio engineering by Drew Jostad. Bridget Bodner is Marketplace's director of podcasts. Francesca Levy is the executive director of digital. Neil Scarborough is vice president and general manager of Marketplace. And our theme music is by Wonderly. Special thanks to Noemi Ramirez, Ben Carroll, Alex Smith, Nico Dubriel, and Rolando Rodriguez.
All right, we'll catch y'all next week for our season finale.
On Death, Sex, and Money, we feature interviews with you, our community of listeners, getting honest about uncomfortable things.
I developed an illness where it isn't safe for me to drive. A friend once said to me, "Sex is like air. You don't think about it until you're not getting enough." This is a similar sort of thing if you just replace sex with driving.
Listen to Death, Sex, and Money wherever you get podcasts.